What the Tech is brought to you by Storyblocks. Storyblocks Video gives you studio quality 4K stock video without blowing your budget. Two words, unlimited downloads. To find out more, go to storyblocks.com/whatthetech. Keeps makes easy and affordable hair loss treatment for men. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/andrew. Welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. I'm joined by not Paul Thurrott this week. Paul is at Build. He took the week off. He's traveling back home today. But I'm joined by longtime GFQ Network executive producer. You like that new title, John? Executive producer to all the content here at the GFQ Network. Webmaster, pretty much everything technical that goes on. Mr. John Bubb. How you doing, John?
Hey, how's it going? And I am definitely not Paul.
You are definitely not Paul, but you are the executive. You like executive producer? Well, I don't know. What's your title?
God of technical domain.
That's fine. I'll go with that. I'll go with that. We do have a lot to talk about. Obviously, Build was this week. Google I/O happened. Facebook had an event that some people are very very confused over their privacy. Statements at that event. A lot is going on, so I do want to talk about this. But John, people can find you at Suncast. You are a regular on the Gunna Geek Network, right? Where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter at Suncast. That's spelled with a K, of course, instead of a C. And then, of course, you know, just all my stuff at GFQ. I mean, I'm not like visibly on the site, but I
now you are.
Everything that's on there.
We used to do a show called Tech News Weekly that people still ask us to do again, but I am.
Yeah, and somebody stole it.
Somebody stole our show, Tech News Weekly. I wonder who that is. Maybe I'm going to start a show called Windows Weekly. How about that?
I think we should. Why not?
Yeah. Let's go into a lot of this Google stuff. There's a lot of exciting stuff out of Google I/O, obviously, this week. There were a couple stories here that I was very interested in. So let's just run down some of the top stories, John, which I know you have an article here. You want to go down the article you have?
Yeah, so I was looking at some of the big announcements from Google I/O this year, and it's kind of interesting, some of the stuff that they announced. You want to just start off with, like, the biggest?
Yeah, let's go with the Pixel stuff, right?
Yeah, so, of course, the Pixel 3a and Pixel 3a XL were announced and go on sale as of this announcement. So this is pretty cool. It's a cheaper Pixel. And I think they start at $399 for the 3A, and I think $449?
$479. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, $449.
For the XL.
$479.
Yeah. It's very similar to the Pixel 3. It's a mid-range device. It includes features like night sight, super res zoom, and portrait mode on the camera. It's got rear and front-facing shooters, so it's got a lot of the same stuff that you would find in the Pixel 3, but at a much lower price. It's got a slightly reduced CPU, but you're getting a lot of the same features that you would find in a Pixel 3.
You are, and so here's the thing. The camera's excellent on it, okay?
It's the same camera.
So you're getting a very high-quality camera. We've seen already over the last, you know, months or year, we've seen the quality that the Pixel 3 is able to produce, which is remarkable photos. This is great, and this is why I'm talking about why this is important. Yeah, it's a slower chip, sure. It's not water resistant, fine. No wireless doesn't have wireless charging, but
you know what? One of the weird things is with this, though, that I do find weird that they missed out on is that you don't get the free Google Photo storage.
Oh, but you do on the Pixel 3.
You do on the Pixel 3.
Oh, that is interesting.
So on the 3A devices, you'll be limited to high quality instead of full resolution for Google Photos.
Oh, that, you know what? That is something that I did not pick up on. I'm curious why. Obviously, because they're losing some money on the storage. But this is... I'm looking at comparison photos, by the way, of the Pixel 3 XL and the Pixel 3A. You're getting very good photos. I mean, it's virtually identical.
Yeah, I mean, hardware-wise, it's very comparable to the 3.
You
get a lot of the same stuff. They just cut a few of the premium things out that makes it this price, such as the waterproofing, wireless charging. That's why you're getting this price decrease for this device.
You're also getting this device for one reason alone, and that's because the iPhone has done remarkable with the XR.
Oh, yeah.
They've done remarkable sales. I'm telling you, I see these phones in the wild. I'm in Manhattan every day, and I'm seeing so many of these 10Rs in the wild because the reality is a lot of people pay for the aesthetic and not necessarily for the components inside as much. If you're getting a good enough camera that's comparable to everything else that's happening, if you're not an enthusiast like us, this is going to be a good device. Honestly, you know, I always have a secondary Android phone. It's something that I've always done is I always have a mid-range Android phone that I use on top of having my flagship. So I have my iPhone, and I have my mid-range Android phone, and I have my flagship. I kind of need to stay in the bubble about this stuff because for me to carry around a very expensive Android phone and make the determination about Android based on this is not a fair assessment of what the real world looks like, right? Most people are not walking around with $1,000 phones in their pocket. They're like I'll give an example. My middle brother, his phone just died. He was using an older mid-range Android phone. He didn't care what it was. He just looked at the price. He went to T-Mobile and he picked up a mid-range Android phone. He bought an Asus or whatever.
That's what a lot of people do.
An LG. And to be honest, it's not a great phone, but it's good enough for him. This is how most people do. Google is very smart, and they did this years ago with the Nexus, where it was affordable. It was an affordable phone to buy out of pocket. And a lot of people assumed this was going to be Google's mindset when they went into this game of having their own branded phones on the market. They didn't. They kind of, after that, it got bigger and pricier, and it got bigger and pricier. And now they're kind of taking a step back and saying, hey, we don't, that's fine. The flagship is fine, but it might be cool to kind of dominate this mid-range with a clean Google Android version, which is a total advantage, having a excellent camera, a total advantage, and the price point.
I think a lot of people have been citing that $1,000 is just a little bit too out there for a good section of the market. And so we need these lower-tiered mid-range devices that have very much comparable features to what you find in the $1,000 devices like the iPhone XS, but also have those features without the price. And yes, you're gonna cut corners somewhere to get that price. But one of the things that people want is that camera, and that's one of the things that they don't skimp on here.
Well, by the way, this is going back to their 2013 pricing of the Nexus 5 at $349.
Yeah.
And that phone was praised. So I think, you know, when we think about these specs, let's look at how we look at PCs, right? John, you remember when we started doing this crazy experiment as GFQ. Mm-hmm. How often was I swapping out computers? Every year or so? Right?
Every 2 years.
At least every 2 years. But there was a point that it was like every year and a half to 2 years I was swapping these things out. It's not as necessary anymore because software has improved tremendously. Graphics chips have improved tremendously where it takes a lot of the pressure off. So I think the same thing. We're kind of hitting this point in phones, in mobile devices, where we're approaching that tier of maybe we don't need to get a new phone every year. And this kind of fills that in if you need to get a new phone every year. I could justify $400 to get a brand new phone. Yeah. I can't justify $1,000 every year to get a new phone, and I can't imagine most of our audience could justify it in that capacity. I think this is very interesting. I'm hoping this sells really well because I want there to be more devices like this. Flagship styling. I'm not necessarily a flagship phone, but a flagship styled phone that's competitive and good enough. Would you consider this, John, at $349? Would you buy this? Yeah. Probably. If you're looking for an Android phone, I know you use an iPhone, but if you're looking for an,
I'm more of an iOS guy, but for an Android device, I think this is definitely something that would make a lot of people look at it. It hits the right price. It hits a lot of the features that I think a lot of people would want, namely the camera. I mean, that's definitely something that I would be interested in, is having some comparable flagship camera on a mid-range device.
Yeah. No, I 100%. 100%.
I'd love to have a Google device to play around with, and this is something that I could see myself getting just as a separate Android device in addition to my iOS device.
Yeah, because it's not a total piece of crap, you know?
Piece of crap, and it's also not $1,000, so you're not having to shell out this crap ton of money for a second device if you're a developer.
Yeah, which actually, that's a good point also. Let's see, some other news that came out, which I thought this was interesting. Android 9 adoption was up 250% over last year. So this is kind of showing that more OEMs are starting to, I guess, adapt the latest version of Android at a quicker rate than previous generations. That's actually very impressive, but it's important to put these numbers into perspective. Today, Android 9 Pie, the latest version of Android currently out on the market, is still only just 10.4% of the Android market. Android 8.x Oreo is available to 28.3% to be exact, of handsets out there. This has been an uphill battle for Google and the OEMs. Mm-hmm. They did do a better job over the last 2 years. They announced Google Project Treble, and that means that Android system updates took less time and it was less costly on the way that it was done. Compared, you know, fragmenting how the updates happen. OEMs have been a little bit better at doing it. Samsung, for example, has been better at pushing these updates. Not great, but they have been better. Now, there was another piece of this that came out, John, which you were very, you showed it to me, and it was very interesting, that Google is going to start pushing out system updates through the Play Store at a better rate.
Yeah. This is called Project Mainline.
Yeah, Project Mainline. So I got to open up the story.
Starting with
here.
Android Q, Google will begin releasing software updates directly through the Play Store instead of waiting on phone manufacturers or carriers. Google says a new system of updates will be offered in what they're calling modules that help tackle specific parts of a device, such as media components or camera bugs, for example. That should also prevent a bug update from screwing up other parts of the device that's not meant to touch it. So this is going to be pretty interesting that they do this, and I'm hoping that this means that a lot of the things that need to be updated can be updated quicker. I think I still have issues with Samsung, because is this something that they can utilize?
Yeah, so what Google has done over the last two generations has been kind of taking some of these application updates and removing it from the OS and pushing it more into the Play Store. So they actually do have some updates that affect the system through the Play Store that come out every now and then. But for the most part, if your carrier or if your OEM like Samsung decides, it's not a priority for me to update this, they're not going to update it. So, yeah. I mean, for you, but does this help you more? Does this encourage you more as a developer?
Oh, it does. Yeah. Because I think that's the biggest thing for developers right now is the fragmentation. And I even had this conversation, I think, last week with a developer. And it's just the fact that, okay, well, there's a lot of stuff out there within the last year that developers are utilizing, but there's a lot of devices out there that are still more than a year behind on updates.
Yeah.
And so they can't properly utilize a lot of these features. So a lot of the stuff that I've been paying attention to is like WebRTC stuff. And I've been talking to a couple of different developers that utilize WebRTC for products. And they're telling me that, in certain situations, this does work, but you need to be on the latest software using this particular browser or this piece of software. And if you're using anything else, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem is that, okay, well, if things were properly updated or up to the latest version, it might be easier to develop this stuff or have it work more universally.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what people really want, especially when it comes to WebRTC and like what we're doing now is that a lot of people are building these products for WebRTC video and audio, and it makes it really easy to do stuff like what we're doing
so
now.
So explain to people what WebRTC is, because I think that's WebRTC, an important point of this.
It's a protocol and software that transports audio and video natively through like a web browser. But the web browser has to have support for WebRTC, and there's so many different updates for WebRTC that don't necessarily exist in some of the software that's out there for Android, especially if it's older software or an older device. You have to have more of the latest software in order to properly utilize WebRTC. And yeah, that's what a lot of developers are hitting a wall with, is that they want this stuff to be super easy and universally available, like just playing an MP3 on your phone. Yeah, that's universally accepted now, but that's the kind of universal adoption that developers of WebRTC products want, is for them to be able to be ubiquitous, like playing an MP3 on a phone, where you can use any device, any browser, any mobile device, basically, and have WebRTC work as intended. And it just isn't quite there yet. So I'm hoping that this Project Mainline stuff will help force updates for products like this.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do want to continue this because there's a lot of other stuff coming out, but I do want to take a little break, John. I want to take a tiny little break and talk about our great sponsor, and that's Keeps. Now, John, you know how important my hair is, right? I think you know that about me. I think if people know... If people know me well, they know how important my hair is. They know how involved I am in the hair community, in the hair loss world. I do technology stuff with Paul. I also do a pro wrestling show. But one of the industries I'm very involved in is hair loss. I'm actually going and producing an event from a hair transplant conference in Manchester in a couple of weeks with Spencer of the Bald Truth, one of the shows here on the network. But listen, here's the thing. Losing your hair is terrible, right? 2/3 out of men will experience hair loss by the time they're 35. Keeps is a hair loss treatment product for men. What they do, Keeps makes it super easy and affordable for you to keep your hair. And that's a major thing here, right? And it's the simplicity of it. I know so many people that have gone to their doctor, or they're afraid to go to the doctor. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. It's a hassle. I was just talking to my wife's cousin. He's 27 years old, and he's starting to see some regression in his hair. He's starting to see the temple region going back, and he has been asking me, he's like, well, do you know who to go to? Do you know what to do? I literally told him on Sunday at a kid's first birthday party, this is the conversation that I'm having, I told him to go to Keeps. And the reason why is that it's super fast and easy. The way that it works, you sign up in less than 5 minutes, you just answer a couple questions, and you snap a couple photos of your hair. So they ask for this, they ask for the back. You take the couple photos, a licensed physician, which is a very important part, will review the information online and recommend the right treatment for you. Then your orders ship right to your door every 3 months. These are FDA-approved products that cost much less, but now that used to cost much more, I should say. Now it's much less, and it's very affordable through Keeps. It starts from $10 all the way up to $35 a month. Here's the other thing here. As someone that is involved in this stuff, I'm a member of Keeps. I use their products. I've been using it for some time now. Maintaining your hair is as important as when you're losing it. You don't have to be losing your hair at a tremendous rate to want to keep it, for lack of a better term. This is something I'm very passionate about, strangely, for some people. John, do you think you know a lot about this. You produce The Bald Truth. You are involved in the hair loss world along with me. I'm very passionate about this, and I take it very seriously. And what I'm telling you, if for me to sit there and endorse a product or a company that works within hair, I don't take this lightly. These are FDA-approved products. We're not talking about elixirs and hocus-pocus medication that have been selling for years on the market. I can't tell you how many emails I get on a daily basis from people that are asking me if this product or that product or this Himalayan-grown yak hair is going to cure their hair. There are two FDA-approved products on the market, and those are the ones that work. Listen, if it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true. But this is true. This works. Go to keeps.com/Andrew. This is a cool thing. You get your first month of treatment for free when you go to keeps.com/Andrew. That's KEEPS.com/Andrew. Keeps is, they send it to your door, which is makes life easier. Nobody wants to sit there and wait. Keep your hair today and keep it tomorrow. Keeps.com/Andrew. You see, I'm very passionate about this, John. Very yes. passionate. I drive you nuts about this hair stuff. To kind of continue with Google, there's going to be search improvements. Google's core search service is picking up full coverage features from news, so you're going to get better search, Chrome cookie control improvements as well, some of the other stuff. Google Assistant improvements. This is great for these devices, these built-in devices that a lot of people have. Google's bringing more assistant capabilities direct on devices, which will help answer questions 10 times faster. My kids love Google Home. They love their Google devices.
Really?
They talk to Google constantly. They let it play. My daughter is obsessed with Ariana Grande.
Oh, God.
And she constantly asks for songs. And Google's constantly playing. And my son just wants Baby Shark over and over again. So these devices are driving me mad, but they're keeping
I'm
them
sorry.
Happy. Yeah, they're driving me mad. Nest is Google's helpful home brand now. Many people figured that Google was going to kill the Nest brand and incorporate in the other product. Instead, Google's killing Home and is now going to be Nest, which is interesting. They also announced a Google Nest Hub Max. It fixes a lot of problems that the Google Hub had, like it has a larger screen, has a camera. There's a lot of improvements here. I'm buying this one. I was about to buy a Google Home. A Google Hub.
Oh no, definitely buy this.
And I'm definitely buying this because I have to tell you, the ability to have the camera and to have, I constantly look up YouTube videos when I'm cooking, or where my kitchen now, because we did it, is like the center hub of my house now. Everybody likes to sit there, and to have this device in the kitchen goes
now,
a long way.
Invite me over?
Never. Not after what you did last time. Not after what you did.
Last time?
Yeah, last time. Do we have to talk about the drunken incident, John? He took his pants off. He was running around the streets. The cops came. It was a whole ordeal. It's not true? Didn't happen?
What happens in Bayside stays in Bayside.
Yeah, that's how it is. that's very true, actually. Later this summer, Google Nest Hub Max will be available in the U.S. for $229. On the Google Play Store, Best Buy, Target, Home Depot, and other locations. Very strong competitive pricing for this device. I'm most likely going to purchase this. And, of course, we discussed Project Mainline. There was a whole lot of other stuff like Google Lens improvements, new accessibility features, which is very important for a lot of people, and a redesigned Android Auto. Google announced that they're launching major design overhauls to Android Auto that will be rolling out in compatible automakers this summer. So it's coming out soon. I have Android Android Auto, and I have Apple CarPlay. I have both. I tend to use both. It's very similar. The layout is not all that difficult. I was using my Android phone because I wanted to use Google Maps and Waze. Now that's incorporated in Apple CarPlay. So I think that, but the UI is similar. The only thing is I am a little weird about UI changes, major overhaul changes in the car, because I kind of want to know what I'm looking at and I don't want to think too much when I'm driving. That's all. It is like getting a new car. You're going to get faster and smarter startup. Android Auto will start as soon as you start your car now and will continue playing whatever media you are playing, and a new navigation bar is included, new notification center, prettier
Sounds
design.
Kind of interesting though.
Yeah, no, it looks good. It looks fine. I can't criticize it. I mean, the overall look is nice.
I just wish I had a car where I could actually use this.
You know what? You could just Can't you put... You can technically... There is a way to plant it and make it into car mode, right? The screen?
I have no idea. I've never used it.
There is a way. I'll send you a link. I found something. So here's another big story, which we also coming. Samsung is canceling the pre-orders for the Fold.
Oh, what a surprise.
Yeah. Samsung said that it can't predict when it'll be able to ship its innovative Galaxy Fold smartphone. As such, it's canceling its pre-orders and customers will be notified of it. So this is a $2,000 phone, the first of its kind to, you know, essentially, first of its kind. It's a foldable display. It becomes, it's like this, and then you make it bigger, and you could use the screen here. You could use the screen there. It folds. This was praised by many as the next big innovation for mobile phones. And Huawei announced one, and right after Samsung, and the Huawei one actually looked a little better. It was a little cleaner in design. This was a little bulkier, a little chunkier. They sent it to all the phone reviewers, all the tech reviewers, and many of them had screen failures immediately.
I feel like perhaps they didn't do enough actual quality testing with these devices. If it got to the point where they got it to the reviewers and the majority of the reviewers had issues, well then, how good was that quality testing? Like, yeah, okay, everybody wanted them to ship a foldable device. They teased it for a long time, and finally we were going to get that foldable device from Samsung that they had promised us. And as it turns out, that device, well, not quite ready for consumers.
So here's the thing.
They've now gone back to, I think, the drawing board and trying to fix a lot of these issues. And I don't think they understand or actually have much of a clue what they need to do in order to address some of these issues, or at least what they need to do to address some of these issues is going to take time that they don't have an estimate for, so they can't give it a date for shipping. Yeah, this could be 6 months down the road still.
So here's my issue with this. First of all, in Samsung's defense, they said this was what the reviewers received was a pre-release version, was not a final version. They got a pre-release version of the hardware to review. But I'm sure
a crap ton of them then.
I'm sure they
tested. And you're giving these to reviewers, so why don't you just send them something that isn't pre-release? And
yeah. Well, here's the thing. They sent it to a lot of reviewers, okay? And that was a little interesting because a lot of people got this thing really early, which you don't see that often, that Samsung is that apprehensive to send a device like this, first-gen device. Apple doesn't do that for sure. But I've never seen Samsung do it at that level. Second, the display is something that broke very quickly. These reviewers only had it for a short period of time. This wasn't long-term usage like the Samsung Galaxy Note that had the Note 7 that had that battery issue. The battery issue was a specific issue that didn't affect every phone. The phones that blew up. The phones that blew up. It wasn't. That was a little bit more of a difficult thing to, I guess, test for Samsung, because you actually had to use the device regularly like that. This is a very quick malfunction. For them not to pick it up in testing is a little alarming. If you want to get a little conspiracy theory-ish, I think they knew about this issue. They sent it out to the reviewers knowing that this issue exists, and they wanted to see how quickly it'll fall apart.
Yeah, I mean, something doesn't seem right here for as many failures as they had with review devices. Like I said, the quality testing just didn't seem like it was there. If they were having these many issues with reviewers, then clearly they didn't do much testing, or they had some sort of ulterior motive, like you're saying, in sending these devices out to reviewers to test.
Yeah, so what do you think is going to happen now? Now, we are in a weird situation where this was a one-of-a-kind device, first-of-its-kind device, I should say. They hyped it. They now have said that there is a serious design flaw, and they have to rethink this and fix it. What happens when they re-release this device on the market? Well, it's Do people want to take a first generation device?
I think all first generation devices are going to be compromised majorly in some way. I mean, if you look at the original iPhone, that thing was not the greatest thing out there compared to what a lot of other devices could do at the time. Yes, it had a touchscreen. It was innovative, but it had a lot of compromises in which it couldn't even do like MMS at the time. And so yeah. I kind of feel like these foldable devices are somewhat in the same area where they're very innovative, but they're still very much compromised. And technology, I'm not sure, is still quite there yet. If you think about, you know, the displays that we have in these devices now, it's the OLED displays. It took probably 4 or 5 years for technology to kind of catch up, where we're actually able to get the yield of OLED displays, where we're not just chucking like 5 out of 7 displays. If you think, remember that Apple even had issues with OLED displays on the iPhone X when it first came out, where they were like, oh, well, this is going to be a little bit more expensive because our yield of OLED displays isn't quite up to snuff, so we're actually not getting as many displays as we'd like from our manufacturer. So I think that's also coming into play here, where it's just a lot of it is technology isn't quite there where you can mass produce it on the scale that Samsung wants to. So it's just all these little combinations of things where I don't think we're quite there yet. I love the concept. I think because I watched Unbox Therapy video of this, and man, when he unfolded that and everything just showed up there like normal in like a tablet display, that was amazing. That was awesome. That was pretty cool. Like, I'd love to be able to, you know, have my phone and somehow just unfold it, and now it's, you know, a 7-inch tablet, and I can easily watch movies or some sort of media on it instead of just a little 7-inch device.
Yeah.
If you're basically doubling the display, that's just phenomenal. But I think it's going to be some time before we even see Samsung do something more. It's going to be at least 6 months, I think.
Yeah, I 100%. Now, what does this mean for Huawei? Because now, if they that device obviously isn't getting released here, but internationally, they would be the first to release this type of device, right?
Possibly, yes.
Yeah.
I just don't see it being as impactful as something that Samsung would do, because Samsung just has that bigger reach right now.
Yeah. Also,
and they're able to get a lot more press.
Now, the big story is with Apple. Does Apple follow the trend here? Do they let Samsung get some sort of market share in these type of devices and then jump in? You know, I know that they're working on one. It was already reported that Apple has been working on one for a while. I do think for them, they should start off with the iPad series and have a foldable iPad and then bring it to the phone.
I think that makes a good amount of sense. Because that, I think, takes away some of the risk of launching something that, like an iPhone, where that everybody wants an iPhone, but not everybody wants a tablet. So if they do this with an iPad, that lessens the risk, I think.
Yeah. No, I think that that's probably the direction they're going to go. You know, you see a lot of people having iPads all around. I would be more likely to buy like an iPad mini that opens up into a regular sized iPad, you know, a bigger iPad. I think that would be an advantage of sorts for people to have, you know, a foldable iPad rather than a foldable phone right now. You know, it's a very confusing time. Things are changing right now. Overall concept is changing. Design is changing. Talk about changes. Facebook announced at their event last week that they're going to be doing a redesign. They're launching a major refresh to the core social networking service. FB5, which it's going to be dubbed, is the fresh new look for Facebook. It's simpler, faster, and more immersive, and puts your communities at the center. Facebook announced, overall, we've made it easy for you to find what you're looking for. And you know, they're doing like a lot of this material design style. I think it looks on the phone, which, by the way, there was an update that was pushed on the phone last week. On desktop, I don't know how that's going to work. I'm curious what the overall concept is going to be because I use Facebook generally on my desktop. I don't really use it on my phone as much. By the way, I did close my Facebook because of a lunatic losing his mind on one of my photos, a viewer. So now my Facebook is closed to the public. What do you think of this?
It's interesting. It's Facebook, though, so I have lots of issues with Facebook as a company. So,
yeah. They also announced, and this was the more interesting part, Facebook announced their Messenger is coming to Mac and Windows as a standalone application. 2019 will be a transition year for Messenger, and messaging will proceed, and they're going to build it around privacy and focus in vision for social network. So this is fascinating. The code name is Project Lightspeed. It's the only Facebook Messenger, and it's designed to launch in under 2 seconds and take up less than 30 megs of storage space on any device. That's 70 megs lighter than the latest Messenger version today. So this is going to be like a standalone app from the image that I saw, and it looks just like the one for the Mac looks just like the Mac's Messenger. Looks exactly like the Mac's Messenger.
I'm struggling to understand why.
Well, I'll tell you why.
Why?
I'll tell you why. Because Skype is their biggest competitor, right, in this market currently. And more
That's
people...
That's not a big competition.
It's not. But more people are on Facebook than on Skype, obviously. And if you could monopolize that market, if you could take that market over, because more people are using Messenger than they are using Skype.
I think it's wasted effort, because the trends right now is that everything is going mobile, and why they need a desktop app, just it doesn't necessarily make sense to me when desktops are losing market share right now. It's dropping. It's not going to get bigger. So what's the point in having a application for your desktop for
it could be enterprise. It could be enterprise eventually. It's gonna be end to end encryption.
People are still using a lot of mobile stuff, so
I'm curious how they do with this. I'm excited to try this out, actually, because I use Messenger a lot. I use it a tremendous amount.
I hate
amount.
Using it.
I don't like using it either, Facebook but Messenger. It's convenient. It's very convenient. That's why.
I think
not
it's one of the
great.
Worst. It's up there with Skype in terms of how much I hate using it.
You know, I don't talk to anybody except for you and Paul on Skype anymore. Nobody's on Skype anymore. It says a lot.
No.
And that was my main communication way. I'm spread up all around now.
So everybody I talk to is like iMessage or text or Discord.
Yeah.
That's what I use. Yeah. I'm not using Facebook. In fact, quite honestly, I don't like Facebook Messenger at all. I think it's just terrible interface. Terrible to use. I don't like using it. It's so bloated.
Oh, it is bloated. And maybe that's going to be their effort, right? They're going to make it smaller. They're going to make it better.
I hope it is.
That'd be great if they could do that, cuz right now it's such a crap interface, and it just doesn't work that well in my opinion. Yeah, you can contact people out there, but oh god, I hate using it.
I hate using
it on my desktop. I hate using it on my desktop.
Well, this is a solution for you, John. Here we have a brand new app for you. It'll be rolled out soon. Before we go into our next story, I do want to take a little break and talk about our great sponsor, and that's Storyblocks. Now, John and me are constantly looking for creative video packages and After Effects templates, and it gets kind of confusing with some of these other services. When you're going to purchase them, you don't know what's part of a package. Like, I signed up previously to Storyblocks. I signed up with one of the big ones out there. And it was like unlimited downloads, unlimited this. But nothing was unlimited. Everything was costly. They gave you like 5 things and that was it. It didn't work. With Storyblocks, if you're in the need for B-roll or After Effects templates or video motion backgrounds for a project, this is a great service for you. You can include all your B-roll for YouTube videos, background for your website, or After Effects templates for video intro. You could do all of this stuff, which is awesome. And this is the cool part. You get studio quality 4K videos without blowing the budget. And the reason why, it's unlimited downloads. Anything in their video members library is yours to download as much as you want, including HD or 4K footage. Sometimes a lot of companies don't do that. Also, After Effects templates, motion backgrounds, and more when you sign up for the unlimited video plan. Download anything from their audio to image libraries, They have a tremendous amount, actually, of audio and images, and you get all your sound effects, music, and photos you need with the unlimited all-access plan. Plus, get exclusive discounts on millions of additional marketplace clips where you save on every purchase compared to a non-member, and contributors get a percentage of the sale. This is a great service, and it's also royalty-free. So that means if you make YouTube videos, you're not going to get hit with a copyright notice because all the content is royalty-free for commercial and personal use, which is unbelievable. New clips are added all the time, and we know how hard this is. John does a lot of this stuff. It's very difficult. New clips are added all the time, and there's always something fresh to spark your interest. You should check back every day. This is a great, great sponsor, and they have a great offer for you. Go to storyblocks.com/whatthetech to learn more about Storyblocks videos. I really like these guys. I like the quality of it. They do it the right way rather than hitting you over the head and going there. I was so turned off by another company that we were using prior to this where I signed up for a unlimited, and I'm using quotes for people who are just listening to the audio. I signed up for an unlimited package, and nothing was unlimited. They hit you every side. With Storyblocks, we've been looking for new video things, and I'm just constantly downloading stuff more than I should. Just downloading everything. Example. Here's a great example. You're putting together an aerial drone shot of the Statue of Liberty, but you couldn't find one because it costs too much. Guess what? Storyblocks has it. Great example. A lot of great packages there. A lot of, essentially, for all your creative needs. Storyblocks.com/whatthetech. I want to thank them for supporting the show. Let's go into this Firefox issue because I knew about this and I don't use Firefox as much. I use Chrome for everything except for one thing. I sometimes need to edit clips of things that are happening like in pro wrestling for Mat Men for the Twitter account. And I went to rip a video and just chop a video down. And guess what? My plugin didn't work, John. My extension didn't work.
Yeah.
So what happened? What happened?
So you'll have to forgive me. There's a garbage truck going around picking up garbage. So
I don't
hear
that a thing
in my background. So
I don't hear.
This is very interesting. So earlier this month, maybe about a week ago, everybody's Firefox add-ons stopped working cold for seemingly no reason. What it turns out is that Mozilla forgot to renew an SSL certificate. And because this certificate expired, well, that meant that all these add-ons for Firefox could no longer work. And so, like, every add-on, including, like, uBlocks Origin, Grease Monkey, any extension that you can think of for Firefox, stopped working. It didn't matter if you tried to add it again, it still wouldn't work. There were, thankfully, a few workarounds, but it took Mozilla 2 or 3 days to actually roll out the update for Firefox that fixed this. So this is just like, oops, and how did you do this? Because this is something that bugs me, is that I see this happen way too often where people forget to renew their SSL certificate. And so their domain goes down because the SSL certificate is expired and you can't access the site anymore. This is a big oops when you're a company like Mozilla, where you have a browser called Firefox that has thousands upon thousands upon thousands of add-ons that people use. And because you forgot to renew that certificate that expired, well, now nobody can use an extension.
That's a big problem.
It is.
You know what's funny? I'll give you an example. When I go to my router, right, I put in the 192, whatever, whatever. I get a message from Google telling me that it's not secure and it's attempting to block me accessing my router. And it says error certificate authenticity invalid. So I just got this the same day that the Mozilla issue happened. I'm not saying it's affecting the same, but this is a certificate issue. It's not updated.
Yeah.
So they corrected this, but it took them a while.
I think version 66.0.4, I think, is the version that it was fixed in. But there were a few other workarounds that I used temporarily, but the fact that it took them a couple days to essentially fix this in the stable release, that kind of bugged me. And the fact that hopefully they won't repeat this ever again, but the fact that they had something that they could easily forget, and that caused a problem like this, which is very frustrating and super inconvenient for a lot of people, because this affected, like I said, every single add-on for Firefox. Didn't matter what it was, it affected it.
Because you have to also think, you know, how many people were using it, and how many people just thought that maybe the app doesn't work anymore.
Exactly.
You know? That also could have been a thing where people just thought the app is done. The app's dead. Sorry. You know, it's a little problem that they had, but hopefully now they learn from this.
Like I said, I see this far too often where people just forget to renew their SSL certificate for their domain. And it's just like, come on, people.
Well, that's why I have you.
You can set this stuff up to be automatic, renewed. So,
yeah, I wonder how that happened. That's interesting. Guys, we're going to wrap it up here, but John and I are going to record something for the bonus show really quickly. I hope you enjoyed this show. We did a little bit like the old Tech News Weekly format, huh?
Yeah.
I like that.
It's fun
doing it that way. Yeah, boom, bim, bam, done. And then we move on to something else. Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Paul is back next week. Want to get his thoughts on Build. I didn't really talk about Build here. But I did, however, download their Chromium Edge browser on my Mac. And I'm going to be using that over the next couple days. So I want to give you guys my input next week on the show. We'll be back on Tuesday with Paul for all things Suncast. Follow him on Twitter, @Suncast. You're also a regular on the Gunna Geek Network. When are you going back on there?
Soon, I hope. Whenever they invite me.
Yeah, whenever they invite
me. Whenever that guy behind my shoulder is gone.
Okay, perfect. You fell in for him. Great.
Yeah.
You can follow me at Andrew Zarian. Yeah, that's what you should do. You can follow me at Andrew Zarian. You could subscribe to us on Patreon, patreon.com/whatthetech. I've been doing too many shows today. My brain is all scrambled. Stay tuned, and we're going to record that after this, and we'll see you all next time. Take care.